Good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because what we have with us tonight, Jerry Mooney, and I've never met Mr. Mooney personally, but I've seen him on a video that was made about the men that were abandoned in Vietnam. And what most Americans don't understand is that there has been a standard policy on the part of people in key positions in government to abandon American prisoners of war. They would never tell the American people that, but they abandoned them after the First World War. Many hundreds were abandoned. After the Second World War, probably 20 to 25,000. This is all covered in a report that came out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We call it the Helms Committee report. We carry it. And then, of course, Korea, about 8,000. And Vietnam, we don't know, several thousand anyway. Men in Laos, none of them ever came back. And our government knew about that, and they simply lied to the American people, the Vietnamese. Well, I'm going to let Mr. Mooney tell the story, because he has certainly been on the front lines of this battle for many years. Mr. Mooney, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be with you.
Why don't you give our listeners just a little bit of background of who you are and how it came to be that you really came to understand what was really going on, when the average American has no idea.
Well, I was born and raised in South Dakota, and I went in the military in 1957, and I went into intelligence. Went to a school out in March Air Force Base, California. And during my last week in the school there, in the 22nd week, I had an instructor from the Korean War, and he talked about the POWs, the people left behind, and he brought up the term Moscow bound for the first time. I never heard that before. And so I went overseas and eventually tied up with a colonel named Colonel Kennedy, who later became a general, and that was his passion, the POW issue. So over the years, whether we were stationed together or I was stationed something else, he had me going through all the records and through the intelligence, not only the signals intelligence, but the human and collateral data, and collecting data on why American POWs didn't come home, why they were held, what the quantum leap technology was, particularly for the Chinese and the Russians. And having lived, and particularly during Vietnam, we had the capability to account for about 98% of the men who went missing. And when we tried to present that capability to the people downtown, namely the State Department, Kissinger and gang, and to the Pentagon, we were told they had something better. And apparently they didn't, because the issue was never resolved. The term abandonment is a little bit cruel. They were left behind, but in some cases there were reasons, and we can get into that. But the abandonment did not come until the issue was forced by the National Alliance of Families and other military personnel, including myself and Senator Smith, in 1992 before Senator Kerry's committee.
And, of course, Senator Kerry, really, I understand, even shredded all the evidence because he didn't want any of it ever to get to the public.
Well, this is the evidence that he shredded that bothers me. Because when I went there, the first thing that I did is I went for 2 days before interrogation, before his lawyers and investigators. And I was given definite promises by the Kerry Committee if they would go where nobody else had went before. And what I'm talking about is in the top secret control rooms to look at the KGB, the GRU, some of the most highest classified data in the world.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back here with Jerry Mooney in just a few minutes, going into the men who are left behind. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jerry Mooney, and he's been involved in this battle to get the truth out about the men who were left behind. And we were talking about the Kerry Committee, and apparently he was called down to testify before Senator Kerry's committee. Senator Kerry chaired that committee. Bob Smith was the vice chairman of the committee, Senator Bob Smith, who was really a great man and a true patriot. Of course, that's why the Republican Party got him out of Congress, ran somebody in the primary against him, because they didn't want an honest man that they couldn't control representing. I guess he was a great state in New Hampshire. So they got rid of Senator Smith after a couple of terms there. But why don't you pick up your story, Jay?
Well, I had these promises that they would investigate all these different sources of information, and what I was talking about is the high-grade crypto systems that passed between Hanoi and Moscow concerning our men and how they were handled and how they were taken, because we knew they were being taken to the Soviet Union. Some were severely injured that the Vietnamese didn't want, who died on the way, and others were taken for quantum leap technology, especially in the missile area. Well, I had these assurances that under Title 18, United States Code 798, that this committee would go into every corner of the intelligence area. And they were doing it to a certain degree. They were doing very well up until August 1992. Then Senator Kerry ran across the execution messages. I had written previous affidavits, and I had testified that the North Vietnamese government had been executing American POWs. And I had went down to NSA, and we had dug up some of these records, and they got back to the Kerry Committee and John McCain. Well, they went through the roof, because the main objective of that committee, I found out, was to normalize relations.
And, of course, McCain, many of the prisoners of war feel that he was a traitor. Many of them will have nothing to do with Senator McCain.
I have nothing to do with him. He tried to question me hard, but he made a fool out of himself.
Well, of course, he's a very powerful, in my estimation, a very evil man, but, boy, he sure gets a good press.
Oh, he does. But when I start naming names, when I name the names of the executed, like Pugh and some of these others, Kerry almost went to the roof. He called me a liar behind my name. And then when the data came out, particularly an execution of 10 Americans at High Point 301 in South Vietnam, and he found out what President Nixon had done about it, Kerry again went through the roof.
Kerry's purpose was really to cover up the truth, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. After August, he was playing a game up until August. But when the execution messages came out, and he became aware of the execution messages, along with that the North Vietnamese were transporting POWs in Laos, and this would open a whole new door, because up until then, everybody was saying, go ask the Laotians. But when he found out that the real command and control was the North Vietnamese...
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jerry Mooney, and Jerry has been involved since he was in his days in intelligence, with the issue of the men who were abandoned. He was called before the Kerry Committee, Senator Kerry's committee, back in 1992, to go into the background of what he knew, what he'd been able to accumulate, the documentary evidence that he had. And, of course, Senator Kerry and Senator McCain were on that committee. Their purpose was to conceal the truth from the American people, because they wanted to establish normal relations with their good friends in Hanoi. Senator Bob Smith was on the committee. He wanted to bring the truth out. He, of course, was never allowed to do that. And, of course, Jerry Mooney testified before the committee, brought out the fact that there had been a number of instances when our helpless prisoners of war had been executed by the North Vietnamese. Apparently, Senator McCain and Senator Kerry just hit the roof. The last thing they wanted was this to be on the public record, because they were doing everything they could to establish normal relationships with the North Vietnamese at that time. So, of course, some of our men had actually been sent to Moscow. In fact, there's a wonderful book called Moscow Bound, an interesting study in thought control in America, is to try to get a copy of the book. Moscow-bound about the hundreds, if not thousands, of American boys during the Korean War and during the Vietnamese War who were sent off to our good friends in Moscow. Pick up the story there, Jerry.
Well, see, when I got into this August story, I had an investigator assigned to me, and I was working very closely with the intelligence community to find the old information and get it out. When the execution messages came out, and Kerry and McCain found out about them, and they found out that there was POW tracking in Laos, which opened up a whole new ballgame, the investigator assigned to me, the only one with the clearances to go down to NSA and some of the other areas, all of a sudden got a sweetheart deal and went to an Ivy League college, totally paid. The committee totally locked me out. I couldn't even call out there anymore. And I couldn't even discuss where other information was. Kerry and McCain ran like little chickens down the street, and they tried to keep everything hush-hush. In fact, the NSA reports that were sent over in August, they kept hidden until after the final report was made. They were running like scared chickens down the street, because if the Vietnam War POW issue would have been opened up, it would have opened up the Korean War, and it would have opened up World War II, and also all those high-tech intelligence agents we lost during the Cold War on peripheral reconnaissance and going into the Soviet Union. And I called out to Senator McCain, and I called out to Senator Kerry's office on the committee several times, and every time I called out there to discuss where we should go further after August of 92, I was told to contact the lawyer, Mr. Cadena. And then I would call him, and he would never return my call.
Well, in other words, there was a cover-up, as so often happens.
It was a treason.
They did not want the American people or the press to get hold of this story.
No, because it hurts too many people. And another thing that really irritated them, that really got to them, I was told by one of the investigators, is that Nixon did something very positive, and very few people know about it. After 10 Americans were executed in 1972 at High Point 310 in Quang Tri Province, North Vietnam, Nixon called in Alexander Haig. He got the message that the NSA sent out. He saw the 10 Americans were executed. Nixon went through the roof. He called Alexander Haig in, not Kissinger, and sent Haig to the Russians and said, "You tell your buddies to knock it off." Now, that was very critical, and this is what scared the hell out of Kerry and McCain, because you would expect a president to send them to the enemy's leaders, Vietnam, and say, "Quit executing our people." Nixon knew, because of the good intelligence he got, that the leaders of that war were not North Vietnam and Ho Chi Minh, but the Soviet Union. And that would have opened up a whole new bag of worms. And it probably would, if it were made public to the American people, that Russia was running that war in Southeast Asia, and it was our true enemy. All these peacenik operations that were going on between the United States and the Soviet Union would have come to a screeching halt.
Maybe we'd have had to quit financing the Soviet Union had
that
come out.
Absolutely. This was a very critical issue. And this fact that Nixon knew it was going on just disturbed these people so much that they had to cover that up. In fact, the document that supported the execution message on what President Nixon did with Alexander Haig was kept undercover for another year.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you pick up the story from there? So, anyway, of course, you're trying to get the information out. You're closed out of the Senate investigation. Kerry's doing everything he can to prevent the information being brought out. He is going to betray those boys and leave them behind. McCain is going right along with him. Well, what about Senator Smith? He's trying to bring the truth out, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I mean, if there's an American hero that ever wore a senatorial suit, Senator Smith is the one who did it. He was facing McCain, Kerry, Daschle, Reed, and the other Kerry from Nebraska. They wanted this thing closed down. They thought it was going to be a cakewalk, and of course you had Senator Kennedy in the background. And then you had an awful lot of other powerful people who had been investigators on different commissions over the years. And you also had former President Carter, who had declared the men dead, and Brzezinski, who had went along with declaring the men dead.
And of course, Kissinger had done everything to cover up the fact that he had promised the North Vietnamese about, what, $4 billion. They were supposed to return the men. We'd give them $4 billion. But They gave back half the men. They kept the rest of them. They wanted their money. And, of course, it turned out that, once again, Henry Kissinger had lied. There was no way we were going to give them any money. And that's why they kept the prisoners, isn't it?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, not only that, but a lot of them was just for revenge. Like Harley Hall was kept because he was one of the last in the unit that got him, the 367th Division, kept him as a trophy. Then there was a group of Americans that, from 1968 through 1972, we were identified by us as the American Pick and Shovel Brigade. These were captured Americans that were used to dig underground warehouses near the DMZ, with the logistics supply systems closer. And we knew initially that we would not get this approximately 100 men back until after South Vietnam fell. And that was part of the negotiating things, because they knew too much about the secret operations of North Vietnam. And the Pentagon and State Department were aware of this. We get the first batch back. That was 600 and some, close to 700. The second batch would come back out of Laos, because we had all the information on them. This would be probably by 74. And then in 75, or any time after South Vietnam fell, we'd get these remaining men who had been in the American Pick and Shovel Brigade. And we had all their names. This was not going to be a difficult operation to go in and say, give us a warm body, we think it might be so-and-so. We specifically had their names, and we had every North Vietnamese unit that had been involved with them. We had them listed and ready to give to Kissinger. And Kissinger's gang, along with the Pentagon, says, we don't need it, we have something better. And it was a lie.
Of course, but Henry Kissinger always lies.
Well, he's across the board lie. But see, this goes even further, because as you get up into the 1976 time frame, Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense at the time, and he got wind of some of this POW mix-up during the war and why some agencies had this and other agencies wouldn't believe it. So he called for what was called the Vietnam fix-up. And we fix up the whole intelligence system so the POWs never fall through the cracks again. And that was done, and Rumsfeld bought off on it and saved on it, and he initiated the whole program. It was very quick. Rumsfeld was really on the ball over this. But at that time frame, we wanted to clean up the Moscow part of it, Moscow-bound, and China-bound part of it, and the North Korean connection. So two of us, myself and a Mr. Whitey Michalski, went from the agency down to CIA. And we told CIA, and whose director just happened to be George Bush Sr., we told CIA that we had evidence that the Chinese were successfully interrogating United States prisoners of war from the Vietnam War, and they were taking that knowledge and creating a new aircraft industry because the Russians had cut off their supply. And to get more evidence, we needed the director, which is George W. Bush, to approve a movement of a collection resource and the tasking so we'd get more information that the State Department could take to the Chinese and we'd get these men back. CIA approved it. We moved it. It was about a $20 million deal. We moved the resource. We got the resource up there to take on a Chinese to look for American POWs. We got all the funding. We got all the troops up there. We even got the hospital sets up there. We got the food. We even got the paychecks up there. But when we collected the information, guess what happened? No, we ain't going to believe it anymore.
Well, were you still in intelligence at this time?
Yes, I was still working for NSA.
Okay, fine. Okay.
But once we got the evidence to start to prove that American prisoners of war had been successfully interrogated by the Chinese, and that quantum leap technology had been extracted from them, and they now had a viable aircraft production program, they stopped it. They don't want to hear about it anymore. They don't want no more messages, no interagency group meetings. No, we only want to get it to the State Department. Approach the Chinese? Heavens no. Everybody ran from it. It's like the all of a sudden that the MIA POWs became the crazy aunt in the attic. Well, everybody knows about it, but nobody wants to talk about it, and nobody wants to do anything about it.
Was this George Herbert Walker Bush, or who
was
that?
Bet. He was in charge, right. And we talked to his NIO, his National Intelligence Officer for China. And we were told that all this was approved to look for these China-bound POWs from the Vietnam War. And, of course, Korean War was also in there, but the primary was the Vietnam War. In fact, I have their names right here. And we were told it was approved. We moved a resource out of Southeast Asia. This whole process cost millions and millions of dollars. And one of the primary reasons for it was to prove that American POWs in the Vietnam War had been successfully interrogated by the Chinese. Quantum leap technology, airframe technology in particular, had been abstracted, and that the Chinese now had a viable aircraft production program for their fighter airplanes. And George W. Bush, CIA, DIA, all of them walked away from it. Once we started proving it, all of them walked away except General Kennedy. And he went down there and raised all kinds of hell, and he came back with a white face saying, they just told me to shut up.
And, of course, this is the thing. There are good people in the military. There are good people in intelligence, and they're not allowed to do anything. And I consider that they simply, our boys were betrayed. And I think it was Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, who said, a country that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its citizens. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Jerry Mooney, who was with NSA intelligence for many, many years, talking about the men we left behind. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Mooney, and we're talking about his experience of trying to get the information out about the men that were left behind. And, of course, the Kerry Committee really did absolutely nothing and other than to lie to the American people, to cover this up from the media. And, of course, in the end, I understand that Senator Kerry ordered all the records any of the important records shredded. Is that true?
Some of them, yes, but the main treasonous act that this man committed, along with John McCain, Daschle, Reed, and the other Kerry from Nebraska, was he didn't bring forward the most critical information and have it declassified. He didn't go after it because these execution messages scared him. The stuff that he promised that he would go after to resolve this issue, he turned his back on. The investigator was gone. I couldn't get back to the agency without the investigator. The lawyer wouldn't talk to me.
In other words, they just transferred the educator and gave him a nice plus job to keep him quiet.
Well, he went to an Ivy League college. I mean, full ride. You know, and then that if they would have named another investigator and gave him the clearances that we could have gone back to these agencies and dug the rest of this information out of top secret control rooms, that would have been fine. But what they did is when they dumped him, they dumped me at the same time.
Sure.
And when they dumped me, there was nobody else to force the issue upon the agency.
Well, I know that Senator Smith really tried to get this information out, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Smith, if there was a peacetime Medal of Honor, he deserves it because he worked to a heart, he worked to a soul. And the rest of these people, like Daschle, Reed, and all the rest of them, they just caved in. You know, they just went with Kerry and McCain, you know, the two musketeers of treason, I call them.
Well, now, of course, what was their major motivation? Who was putting pressure on them to conceal the truth so that we could open up trade relationships with Vietnam?
That is one of the most provocative questions that have been floating around for the last 20 years.
Well, I just want a simple yes or no. Yes. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thought is this, is that McCain, his daddy was an admiral. And McCain didn't live up to daddy's expectations. And I've done a lot of work on this, and I've got a lot of hearsay, so I have to say it's hearsay, okay? And when he came back, and the other POWs, many of them considered him to be a traitor. And all their debriefings are, you know, remain classified today. So I think his philosophy was just close down the issue, normalize it, and, you know, all my headaches and heartaches go away, you know, and daddy won't pick on me anymore. With Kerry, I think he has a deep embedded hatred for the military. I think it is there because when he questioned me for 30, 40 minutes on and off, another 30, 40 minutes on and off, and the things that he said about me that I heard through investigators, I think he just has a deep embedded hate for anything that is the military. He thinks the world is a place where everything should be rosy and everything should be wonderful and he should be in charge and married to the richest woman in the world. I think the man's a little nuts as far as I'm concerned.
Did I suspect that you're not voting for John Kerry?
No, I'm not. But see, I got to, behind my back, he called me a liar. One of the investigators called me up and he says, John McCain, Kerry just called you a liar in one of the meetings over the execution messages. And I called out there and says, I want to talk to Senator Kerry. I understand he's calling me a liar. And, he'll call you back. He never called me back.
Well, of course, and after all, if you were a liar, you probably were under oath. Now, you could have been charged for perjury.
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't he do that?
That's right. I also had 18 affidavits out there, you know, talking about this issue. Nobody charged me with perjury. I also had a 400-page briefing strip out there, which I placed under oath. I submitted under oath. Nobody charged me with perjury.
Hold that thought right there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening is Jerry Mooney, who was with the NSA for a long time. He played an important part in the Kerry hearings. And, of course, Kerry did everything he could to cover up the truth. Now, I want you to know that I don't like either presidential candidate, so I'm not simply picking on Senator Kerry. Of course, I would pick on Governor Bush or President Bush all the time, because I don't believe that either man is their own. They belong to a secret society, that their oath is to that secret society. Society, which is so secret that they can't discuss it. Well, is there loyalty to the secret society, which is Skull and Bones, which is founded in the occult? Actually, Skull and Bones began in 1832 in Bavaria. It was associated with a Bavarian secret society that, of course, like so many other secret societies of that time in Germany, was associated with the Thule Society, and out of the Thule Society came the Nazi movement, and the people who've been in the tomb doing work there told Alexander Robbins that all over the walls there are Nazi swastikas and Nazi memorabilia. Makes you feel real good to know that doesn't matter who you vote for, both of them are a member of a secret society that's so secret they can't discuss it. But there they have Geronimo's skull, which incidentally Prescott Bush, George's grandfather, stole from the Indians, and nobody's powerful enough to get that back. But also they have all the Nazi memorabilia and this almost worship of this this cult movement, which was Nazism was. So, but let's get right back to our subject, which is, of course, the men we left behind. So now, after the Kerry Committee hearings in 1992, were there any more significant hearings, or did that more or less close the door and mean that the men were abandoned after that?
It more or less closed the door. They just shut the door on the issue and started playing patty cake with the family members. You know, bring them out once a year, tell them we're working out, we're going to have surprises next year, and all these other things.
In other words, they just lie year after year, keep their hopes up, knowing full well that they have no intention of doing anything.
And what the real damage that it did was that for the first time in history, NSA people came out and talked, me and another guy. Nobody else had done that before. And NSA had follow the lead. He says, we'll cooperate and provide the information. But when Kerry dropped the ball, and with all the rest of them, McCain and the rest of them, when they dropped the ball in mid-August, when these execution messages became known, the agency backed off and said, heck, you know, it ain't worth risking our careers, too. But for the first time in history, we had the agencies ready to open up. We had them ready to come out and tell the truth. And that just must have scared the hell out of a lot of people. But when Kerry turned it down and turned his back on him and says, I don't need you anymore, we're not going to have any more investigators down there, we're not going to have any more discussions, I was told by people that I still know in the agency that the agencies were very upset and very mad. And they just walked away from the issue. We had it made. We had it ready to settle the issue. We had it ready to go to the grandchildren and the children and the wives and the husbands of all these MIA POWs and tell them the truth and let them close the book. And McCain, Kerry, the mindless bastards of Zorro, got up there and screwed everything up because they didn't have the guts to fool out, you know, follow it through.
Well, but don't you think that this whole thing was simply to establish normal relationships with Vietnam, North Vietnam? And, of course, had they said, give us our men back, the Vietnamese would have gladly given them back. And, of course, they wanted those. They were desperate for normal trade relations to get financing and to get the Western technology. They would have given the men back, don't you think?
They would have given the men back if we would have asked for them and used the intelligence information that Kerry and McCain were given. And so we could have went to, let's just take one man, for instance, Lori Van Rensselaer. Let's just take one MIA POW's remains were returned after the war was over. We could have went to the North Vietnamese and said, we know you captured Lori Van Rensselaer alive. We know that your 258th AAA Regiment shot him down. We know that your 367th Air Defense Division picked him up, and we know that the 218th AAA Regiment at Thach Bon Long Bai used him on the American Pick and Shovel Brigade. Now, here's the information to support that, because we intercepted your messages, read your codes, and we know that you said this. We know this is the truth, so you can't lie to us. Give us back Lori Van Rensselaer. Now, we could do this with every American that was lost in North Vietnam. We could do this with every American that was lost in Laos, south of 20 degrees. And we could do this with every American that was lost in the northern province of South Vietnam, Quan Chi. We could have went to the North Vietnamese and told them exactly what we knew, they knew, and got the men back. And when Kerry and McCain and Daschle and Reed and the other Kerry, and they found out about this stuff, they ran like yellow-bellied chickens, because they know if you blew open the Vietnam War and you had a look to Korea, and if you looked to Korea, all of a sudden you're getting into our great friends in China and our booming friends with the souls of honesty in the Soviet Union. So they shut it down. They closed it down. Money, oil, production, outsourcing was more important than our men.
And I call it treason. We'll be back in just a moment here with Terry Mooney. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jerry Mooney, formerly with the NSA. How long were you with the NSA altogether?
Well, I was with Security Service for 20 years, but I worked at the agency. The Air Force Security Service had loaned you to the agency. I worked there about 11 years, I guess.
So are you retired now from the military?
Yes, I retired in 1977.
All right, fine. So then the time then that you were actually... in 82, had you retired and then were you working as a civilian for NSA or what?
No, I was retired. I got in back into this issue because when I left the service, I was told specifically that the POW should be resolved. I moved to an Indian reservation out in Montana. I just wanted to get away from everything, take my family, get a good education for them, and not have anything to do with it. But then in 1984, cable TV came in and I was watching CNN and they were talking about a crash and they said everybody was dead and I knew that was wrong. Because there was 8 survivors off that aircraft that were taken into prison.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And they never came home. And so I tried to contact the government. The government told me to go to hell. I tried to try Congress. Congress wouldn't answer my letters. I finally got a hold of a lawyer in North Carolina who had a lawsuit on the issue and tied up with him. And then from then on, it just took off. But I tried to go to the government first, and they told me to go to hell.
Well, now, what happened after 1992, after the Kerry Commission? Has everything pretty well just sort of died down? And I know I still get the occasionally letters from or faxes or emails from the people, the veterans, families, you know. But it seems like they go through the ritual of talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. But they obviously, I think some of the organizations have been infiltrated by somebody and totally neutralized them to give the... simply try to wear the families down with promises after promise, knowing full well that they have no intention of ever bringing out the truth.
No, once they whipped me, and they whipped Terry Menarson, and they whipped Colonel Howard, and they had the agencies back off, the issue was essentially dead. I mean, this was the final last blast, according to them. But what they got to realize is that the issue is not a blast, because these POWs are now... blackmail chips. I mean, these people, even if they're dead, their records in Soviet, Russian police gulags and stuff like this, their records and pictures still exist.
But of course, our government did everything they could to keep them from coming back. My understanding was that Yeltsin offered to turn over those records to us, and he was told we didn't want them.
Again, no. This is another little game that Kerry and McCain played, and they made sure it was on TV, and they made sure there was a record of it. Instead of going to the Soviet GRU, which is the military, which are the ones that were associated with Moscow bound and were the ones that were most interested and took our men from Southeast Asia and handled all this
bombing. Hold that thought right there, Jerry. We got to bring our... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Jerry Mooney, and essentially, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, our telephone number out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. There are an awful lot of idealistic young men who went off to fight in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And of course, some of them were on the secret operations in Laos. Some of them were working for the CIA in Laos. But some of them were our pilots that were actually shot down over Laos. And, of course, they were intentionally abandoned by people in our government, and they've had to cover this up ever since then, because the last thing they can let the American people know is that Henry Kissinger, who is really one of the most evil men that ever worked at the upper echelons of our government, and yet he is a very close confidant and friend of our current president, as he was of his the president's father. Henry Kissinger had promised the North Vietnamese $4 billion if they would simply let us get out of the war. We would pay to reconstruct North Vietnam, and of course the deal was made. They would give us our prisoners, we would give them the money. They gave us half of the prisoners, and we never gave them the money, so they kept the other half of the prisoners. They admitted this to Bob Dornan and to others, and we have a number of interviews on this subject. So, but, of course, we're talking then about Jerry Mooney, because he was on the front lines of trying to get this information out, had worked for 11 years for NSA, that's the National Security Agency. Some people refer to it as no such agency. In fact, I'll never forget when a friend of mine asked me, who worked for the agency, asked me what I knew about it. I said very little, and he said, that's good. You're not supposed to know much about this agency. But this is the premier of the intelligence agencies. They're the ones that listen to your telephone calls, tap your emails, read your faxes. Of course, it's all done by computer, and then turned over to human intelligence. Well, they don't really do it. They get the British to do it. We read the communications in England and other countries. The English do ours, because after all, they wouldn't want to do anything illegal there. They would never violate the laws, or would they? Pick up the story there, Jerry.
Well, the whole thing is, Sue, you just brought up something that should remind me of something here. You know, Kerry and McCain also, when I went into the congressional building and down into the basement and was, debriefed and interrogated before my testimony, I was given the absolute promise. Well, first of all, I told them, and look, we're not the only ones that have this information. I says, the British have got it, GCHQ. The Canadians have got it, DSD. CBNRC, or CBNRC with the Canadians, DSD with the Australians. They all have this information, and in fact, some of their information War II in Korea is better than ours. And I says, you should go to them under Title 18, United States Code 798, and ask them to share these documents and to have them declassified. I was promised that they would do this. I have since learned they didn't even try. Because if you did that, you'd open up World War II. If you did that, you'd expand on Korea. And also, you'd force the French government to come face-to-face with their MIA-POWs that went Moscow-bound. You'd force the British government to come face-to-face with their MIA-POWs that went Moscow-bound. You'd force the Australian government to face up to the fact that a lot of theirs went China-bound. So this became an issue. They'll promise you everything. They'll lie to your face. Because when they're in charge, they're not under oath. You are. And they'll charge you with perjury in a minute. But these cowards, these lying cowards who now want to lead this country, and I include the Bush family in this, are telling us, oh, the ultimate test of patriotism is to keep faith with the troops.
Now, right? That's right. Back our troops and we'll send over hundreds of thousands more to die.
You know, I told a story and it got to McCain and Kerry, and it really upset them. And this was after the hearings are down, and I was pretty upset about the whole thing. And I said, you tell Kerry, you tell McCain, you tell Daschle, and the rest of you, mention these names. Frank, Kulin, Pasquale, Christensen, O'Neill, Williams, Zitch, Avery, Elfie, McCall, Chapman, Pullen, and Prater. I says, ask them if they recognize those names. And the investigator called me back and said, they don't recognize the names. Well, in early April 1972, when there was an American behind enemy lines, on the ground, escaped and evading, and he was in danger of losing his freedom, the risk factor was almost impossible. Nobody could get to this man because of all the AAA and light machine gun fire that was around him and all the units, North Vietnamese units. And yet these men I just mentioned knew that. We told them by telecon out to where they were with their helicopters, rescue helicopters, don't go. This is a suicide mission. The word came back that they would not leave an American on the ground in danger of losing his freedom behind enemy lines. They went. These were young kids. They kept the faith, baby. And every one of them died. Except one. They would not allow one American. Yet you have John Kerry. You have the great Kerry from Nebraska was on a 9/11 commission, which is a joke. We can talk about that someday, too. You got McCain, oh, the American darling. You got Daschle, a powerful man in Congress. You got Harry Reid, that on a good day he might be able to spell his name, but he's minority whip for some strange reason. They left thousands behind. They sat on this committee and didn't have the courage to politically pursue it, where these young men went out and gave their lives to try to bring one home, which they finally did. And yet these powerful people, you know, they just sat there and said, well, we'll take a walk on this issue after August of 92. And then they got the guts to stand there on TV and saying the most powerful act of patriotism is to keep the faith with the troops. When they walked away from thousands and thousands and thousands of troops, as well as their families, friends, Gold Star mothers, Red Star mothers, you name it, they walked away from them. And for that, they should not be dog catchers in the smallest community of this country. And yet they're running for president and everything else. It's a shame on this country is what it is. It's a terrible shame.
But, of course, the thing is that this is not being brought out by, certainly George Bush isn't going to bring this out, because it's all of us complicit in this, and the cover-up, and he is complicit in the cover-up. So, you know, they get together in the debates, and they talk about nothing of any significance. They don't talk about the real agenda behind everything going on, and that is the betrayal of the American people as we move towards globalism, the destruction of sovereignty, the massive illegal immigration. Did we ever hear that brought up at any of the meetings or any of the debates? No, they're not going to talk about the really important issues. They're going to just like, you know, it's a great show till the American people understand it is all a show. In fact, what's so interesting, the New York Times had a picture of George Bush. And, of course, they show that the wire, the box that he's got in between his shoulder blades, a fascinating picture, George Bush couldn't even get up there in a debate by himself. He had to wear a wire. Of course, the Bush camp denies he was wearing a wire, but you can actually see this. And even the New York Times has gone into this. You go up on the Google about George Bush wearing a wire in the last debate. Why? Because he can't even carry on an intelligent conversation without somebody telling him what to say. That is the great tragedy. But, of course, he is simply a front for the power structure behind him. I will say the thing about Kerry, I think Kerry is a very intelligent man. I also think he's a very evil man.
Oh, he's a weasel. But see, I just had a meeting with some pretty old folks, expert intelligence people that go back pre-Korean War. And these people, they got more brains in their hip pockets than probably half of Washington does in the whole District of Columbia. But they made an interesting statement as we were sitting around. And they said, you know, we think the country deserves these characters. Because look at the character of the American people. What has it turned into? Like one of them says, when I left and went into the military and went overseas, education was in good shape, economy was in good shape, morality was high, our standards were high, we knew what pornography was, our judges weren't making laws. When I come back, the whole thing was a mess. He says, when I left and went away for 20, 25 years, I looked around and we had people that believed that liberty was a responsibility. When I come back, half the nation believes liberty is a right and everybody else's responsibility. And he says, you know, these guys kind of have a general opinion. Now, these are old folks that have been around and know an awful lot about the world. He says, we think the country deserves these people because we're in the Etruscan age. We're all into pleasure and happiness. And we let the same people do the fighting. We let the same people do the dying. And we just sit around, and if somebody gets in our way, I got my rights. They never mention the word responsibility. Have you ever heard of an ACLU for responsibilities? Have you ever heard of one?
No, I guess I haven't.
There isn't one around, running around telling people, hey, you know, pay for your own health care instead of spending $300 a month on lotteries. You know?
Well, the government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave, like ours, has got to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. And people believe that there's a free lunch. There is none. If you take the free lunch, why, of course, the fellow who provided the lunch owns you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 888-2-4-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We're talking about the men we left behind. And, of course, if we could ever get the American people to really understand that this was a cover-up, not only by people at the highest levels of our government, but by the entire media. Oh, crazy. They'll occasionally put out a story on this, tell about some bones that are coming back. But nobody ever talks about the fact that this is well known, that Kissinger simply made a promise for $4 billion. Nixon went right along with it. They lied about it afterwards. And I, you know, the Watergate issue was absolutely nothing. And Nixon told a fib. But the fact that he would abandon those prisoners, that is what I could never forgive him for. And he would rather, of course, continue lying even after he was out of office and tell the truth. He was a man without a soul.
Well, why do you think Nixon went to Alexander Haig over the executions instead of Kissinger? Nixon also knew Kissinger was a no-good Nick.
Right, but of course, he went right along with it. Of course, he knew the power structure. He knew that he was susceptible to the power structure, and he was frightened to death that they were going to come after him, which they did. But the thing that he owed to those boys who went overseas to fight was to tell the truth. Even if it would have destroyed him with the media, he should have told the truth.
Yeah,
that's the difference between character and a sniveling little, well, I don't want to get into character assassination, but if there's one man responsible, it was the man at the top, and that was Richard Nixon. He knew that we abandoned those boys, and he lied about their coming home. He said all of the troops are home.
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. But if Watergate hadn't come up, the issue would have been resolved. And if Kissinger had been thrown out the door like he should have been, the issue would have been resolved. If it would have been kept out of congressional hands, the issue would have been resolved. When you get all these politics involved into it, and I want to talk before we're getting close to the end here, but I want to hit something really hard here.
All right. First of all, let's go to Carol, and we'll have time for you to hit it hard. Carol is calling from Oklahoma. Hi, Carol. How you doing?
And the signal is real buzzy and fuzzy tonight, and I'm hearing a French broadcast over you.
No, what frequency are you listening to?
7315.
7315. You might try 7535 and just see. But, of course, the 7315 is supposedly the better one. So
yeah, usually it is. But I'll try that other one tonight.
7535. And, incidentally, as of the 31st, why we're changing the afternoon, the earlier shortwave broadcast, to 7.535. I think that's the 31st. And then, of course, the evening programs, one will be on 7.
What time would that be, Central Time?
That would be the Central Time program is 5 to 7 in the evening, and that will be at 7.535 as of the 31st. And then the evening program that you're listening to, Central Time, which, of course, is 10 to 12, one will stay at 7.535, and the other will go to 6.095. That's the end of this month.
Okay.
Well, did you have a question or comment?
Well, yeah, yes. I wondered, since I couldn't hear it all, I wondered if he did hit on the fact that President Ronald Reagan wanted to go get them, and Ross Perot had volunteered his money and planes and so forth to go get them, and the one great general that's also aspired to be president, that being Colin Powell, was the one who said, "Oh, no, Mr. President, we can't do that. We can't have the American people finding out." So what about Mr. Powell?
Do you have any thoughts on Mr. Powell, Jerry?
Well, this is one of the areas I want to get into at the end here. Okay, can we get into it?
Go right ahead.
Okay.
You hang on there, Carol.
All right.
Now, Colin Powell was tactical commander in Vietnam. Wesley Clark was a tactical commander in Vietnam. There was all kinds of tactical commanders in Vietnam. Now, we people in the intelligence business could not understand why these tactical commanders kept our troops in the field under the rules of engagement, which gave all the advantages to the enemy. And we waited and waited. In fact, we even prompt some of them saying, why don't you tactical commanders tell the Kissingers and tell all these people, the Johnsons, that, hey, we're not going to throw our troops away in this turkey shoot under these rules of engagements. Either we fight or we're going to take the troops and go home. Not one did except one, a guy by the name of General Blackjack Lavelle. He had a chance to preempt in 1971 an invasion by the North Vietnamese that occurred in 1972. Once he found out that they were going to invade, and he was told by NSA that they were, General Lavelle went out and he kicked butt. He broke the rules of engagement. His statement was, I am going to protect the troops. No more POWs, no more WIAs, no more KIAs, because we're playing this silly game. Well, guys like Kerry and his anti-war movement found out about it. And they raised hell with Congress, and Congress raised hell about it. They wanted to court-martial General Lavelle for saving American lives. Now, General Lavelle, and we were counting on the American Legion and the VFW and all these veterans groups to come in and support him. They ran for the hills, like they've run from the hill for the hills on the POW issue. All these veterans groups have. Only some very high intelligence people making phone calls from NSA downtown saying, hey, if you court-martial this hero, this General Lavelle, we're going to start spilling beans and you're all going to go to jail. Well, they let General Lavelle retire in private, in disgrace, and he more or less died in disgrace. But he is the only tactical commander in Vietnam, the only one who had the guts to stand up for the troops during battle, and also he was there on the POW issue. The rest of them ran and are still running, the Wesley Clarks. The VFW is still running. The first time I went to testify, I flew from Wolf Point, Montana, the Fort Peck Indian Reservation, down to Billings. I was standing in line to go out to testify before the Makowskarians. A plane had come in from California, and these two guys were switching planes to go to Minneapolis and down to Washington. They were from the VFW. And they were talking about me and why they were going to Washington to stop me, and the VFW could not afford to have the POW issue come forward because they might lose some hospital beds or they might lose some benefits or some crap like that. The VFW, forget them.
And I think you can forget Colin Powell. I think he's always been the yes man. He did not have the courage to do what was right there.
All these tactics.
He did not have the courage to do what was right in the first Gulf War. But he's been well rewarded. He's the Secretary of State.
Remember Black Jack Lavelle.
Right.
An American hero. If you ever get a chance to read any of the paperwork and read about this man, stood up for the troops, is the only tactical commander who ever stood up for the troops. He saved lives. He sacrificed his career. Because he supported the troops. The rest of them?
Hold it.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, I will... Carol, we're going to have to... Oh, I guess we lost Carol there. But certainly most of the men simply did what they were told to do. That's were in the military. It's very difficult when you're in the military to say, I'm going to risk my career and do what's right. We have a few people who did. We saw MacArthur do it during the Korean War. He knew he was going to get relieved of command, but he would not continue fighting a war he was not allowed to win. We weren't allowed to win the Korean War. We weren't allowed to win the Vietnamese War. And what the American people really don't know is we financed the Russians who provided all the weapons for the North Vietnamese. This was a war we never intended to win. So we're just about out of time, Jerry, and I really appreciate so much for being with us, and I want to get you on our other programs, but what are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Well, the thing that I want to bring across is the POW issue is going to pot, prisoners of terror. And all these Americans that have been sitting around in this great country of ours and have had the freedoms because people have been willing to go to Arlington Cemetery to protect those freedoms, this is a new kind of war. And the POW is fading into history because those types of war are going away. It's going to pot. That's prisoners of terror. And the American people better wake up. It's coming right here to the USA. You know, like the Neil Diamond or the song is, you know, they're coming to America. Only this time it's not immigrants, it's terrorists. And you're going to find these people are going to be coming after you. So all these years that you've ignored the POWs, all these years that you ignored the sacrifice of the American serviceman, the fear to walk through Arlington Cemetery and see what the real cost of national security is and what liberty is about, not just rights but responsibility. These people are coming here, and once they get smart, they're going to be coming after you. And then you're going to have to look into your intelligence agencies and your Kerrys and your McCains and the rest of them and say, protect me. And they're not going to be able to do it. The 9/11 Commission and their findings and their implementations has assured that the terrorists are going to be successful in this country. And maybe that's an issue we can talk about at some later date. The 9/11 Commission's report is the biggest joke in the history of the world from an intelligence standpoint, and it makes this country totally vulnerable.
All right, Jerry, we're out of time, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you a call off the air, and we'll do a program on the 9/11 Commission report, because, of course, I agree with you totally. It was never, of course, put out to reveal the truth. It was put out to conceal the truth. And if you don't know the truth, you're not going to be able to continue to be free. God bless you, Jerry. Thank you so very much for being with us. Do you have a website or anything you want to put out?
No, I threw my computer out the window. I figured it stymies your brain.
All right. God bless you, and thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest this evening has been Jerry Mooney, who in many years was with the NSA. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening was Jerry Mooney, who spent many years with the NSA, and he's risking everything to come forward and talk about the experiences that he's had, what he knows. He's reliable. I know certain of the veterans organizations who actually have utilized him on their videos, which we should carry. Maybe we will one of these days, but we have a great four-tape set. It's called The Men We Left Behind. That's The Men We Left Behind. And then we have another four tapes entitled One Man Returned. That's the story of Bobby Garwood. And, of course, the one thing our government did not want was for any of those men ever to come back. This is one of the most heartrending tapes you've ever heard, four tape set. We have a four tape set on Vietnam. We have copies of General Lewis Walt's book. I interviewed General Lewis Walt, the four-star Marine General Commander of I Corps, 66-67. He told me we could have won the war at any time. 2 months we could have won the war. Simply invaded North Vietnam. Oh, you couldn't do that. I talked to William H. Sullivan, who was the American ambassador to South Vietnam at the time. I interviewed him in 1980. He said, we could have won the war at any time in 2 months. I'm not even a military man. I could have won the war. I never understood why we didn't. He'd even been at Paris with Kissinger, signing the peace betrayal there. He wasn't a bad man, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He didn't understand what it was really all about. But you need to understand what it's about. You need to get the facts. You need to get the book, Betrayed, written by Dr. Douglas. It's the story of the POWs and what happened to them. That's Betrayed. And if you can read that book without weeping, why, there's no hope for you. You need to get our four-tape set, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, because we financed the North Vietnamese all during the war to keep it going. We have an interview I did with Professor Sutton called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. So let me review the Best Enemies Money Could Buy video, or the book. The book Betrayed, the story of the POWs, the tape set on Vietnam, the tape set One Man Returned, the tape set The Men We Left Behind, and of course you can get the Vietnam special, which includes the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report about the boys we abandoned in the First World War. You remember that? Remember that came out of the Second World War, the 20,000 to 25,000 men we abandoned? You remember reading about that? Or maybe you didn't read about it. Maybe somebody controls the media and you're not supposed to hear about this. Or the men we abandoned in Korea, and many of them were sent to Moscow, tortured to death. They were experimented on, and maybe some of them are still alive. But does anybody really care? The men we abandoned in Vietnam. The president says we should be loyal to our men. We should support our soldiers. But he doesn't seem to be concerned about the men we abandoned in Vietnam, or the men we abandoned in Korea, or the men we abandoned in the Second World War. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand this war. You need to get my video, The Iraq, The Untold Story, and the syllabus goes with that. You need to understand what this is about. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, or if you can remember it, 1-800-5-HIV, like the virus, HIV war, because we are at war. America, our future, our families, our freedom are under attack today. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to attending our November 6th all-day meeting, Saturday, November 6th, here in the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be an all-day meeting. Lunch is going to be served. We need to know how many people are going to be there. So if you can make it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You won't have to listen to me all day. We'll have outside speakers, excellent speakers. And, of course, you'll get a great deal of education and meet other people from across America who are concerned about the future of our country, the future of liberty. Remember that liberty and limited government are synonymous. Remember that both of our presidential candidates come from the same secret society. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, goes into secret societies, you need to get it. 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. We'll Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we have with us on the line Zeph Daniels, and he's written a book called Lamb. We carry the book. We think it's an important book. It's a fictional book, and we don't carry many books of fiction. In fact, I think it's the only book of fiction that we do carry. But it's an important story because it will give you insight into the truly dark spiritual forces that are at work within our society. And Zeph himself was raised in a satanic family. Now, it's very difficult to believe for the average individual that there are satanic families in the world today, or that there's satanic families in America. And yet I've met a number of people whose families were satanic. In fact, if you go up on the Internet and begin looking up Anton LaVey, you'll find only 8,800 references to him. But you start getting into Satanism, while you're getting up 60,000, 80,000, Luciferianism, hundreds of thousands, Manly P. Hall, hundreds of thousands of references. The Process Church has over 3 million references in it. What is the Process Church? Why, of course, this is the church that both David Berkowitz and the Charles Manson were affiliated with, at least according to a fascinating book written by Maury Torrey called The Ultimate Evil. And Maury Torrey spent literally years researching this incredible story of David Berkowitz. Of course, you're never going to hear this from the mass media, that David Berkowitz was part of a satanic cult, and he didn't kill all those people. He killed some of them. He was under orders, but, of course, he did not kill all of them. He killed two of the eight people he was accused of killing, and Charlie Manson was affiliated with this as well. And only when you begin to understand this, that there really are satanic organizations, satanic families, can you begin to understand the very nature of the evil that permeates every aspect of our society today. Turn on television and watch so many of the programs, obsessions with sex, obsessions with violence, obsessions with evil. And that's what it's all about. And of course, we are being conditioned to accept evil. Vices of a monster of such horrible mien as to be hated is but to be seen, but seen too oft, too familiar with her face, we first endure, and then the first pity, and then endure, and then embrace. And that's exactly what we're doing here. Well, Zeph has been on the front lines of this battle since he broke loose from the satanic family. And Zeph, how are you tonight?
Doing very well, Dr. Stan. And that was, I would agree with you that even though the book is fiction, there's a lot of truth in it.
All right. Of course, you were deeply involved in the music industry.
I was involved in film and television and writing projects in Hollywood.
All right, fine. And, of course, you were doing fairly well financially, weren't you, under those circumstances?
Doing well. But I didn't have a clue at that time that I was surrounded by the enemy. I think in some ways they were using me to come up with stories, and especially horror stories, involving this very subject. And the interesting thing is I wrote about this subject not knowing that it was really true until finally I kind of, my programming, as I like to call it, broke, and I was able to see that surrounding me were, you know, the typical handlers, programmers, Satanists, and they were controlling my reality.
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here. I guess this evening, Zeph Daniels. Zeph, why don't you give us your background, your story, your upbringing, and what this is all about? And because, of course, it's so difficult for most people to imagine that this sort of thing could really happen today. And yet I've heard the story from so many people that I'm firmly convinced is true. And, of course, there are the people. We carry a book written by a psychiatrist who's had to deal with so many people of multiple personalities or dissociated personalities, actually created by a mind control programs funded with your tax money through the CIA, because the CIA, at least one component of it, and this whole satanic movement are interlocked. So if you pick up the story and explain to our listeners what you remember, how it started, and of course, how you got to where you are today.
Well, first of all, I was born into the situation where it was a wealthy family in Los Angeles, a prestigious family. And from an early age, I had, you know, memories of what would be termed satanic ritual abuse, which involved adults in pedophile situations with children. But it was very clinical. In other words, I believe it was to traumatize children. I had to be I think 4 years old is the earliest memory that I have. I had to be removed from that particular situation because I was kicking and screaming. I was even fighting them off then. But they try to get the kids over onto that side when they're young, because the spirit they find when you traumatize a child will give up. And when you give up, then, of course, it becomes tantamount to consent. Some people call it DID, dissociative identity disorder, where the soul really actually dissociates from the body. And that allows them to take over. In other words, I believe a child at that point is demonically possessed, and it's the same demon that's controlling the group. The families usually operate in groups, or, if you like, covens, although it's not really witchcraft in the way people think about it. What my memory is that it was very clinical. These things also involved our human sacrifices of babies and so forth, and children are forced to drink blood, and children are also put in cages or tortured. I had been tortured also when I refused to go along with them. They had put me in psychiatric facilities, or so they said. There's really no record of that. And I was tortured, literally tortured, with the idea of breaking me, and forcing me to conform to their way.
All right, will you hold that thought for just a minute, Zeph, because we've got to bring our other stations right back in with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Zeph Daniels, and we're talking about the fact that he was raised in a satanic family, submitted to abuse at a very early age, about four. They used torture, sexual molestation, all sorts of things to create dissociative personalities, and people find that very difficult to believe. Of course, a few years ago, there was a television program. It was called The Pretender, and it was about these children who were kidnapped, who were taken to this... Well, it was some sort of a government institute, and of course, where they traumatized the young people, the children, and of course, in the process of doing that, they were able to create a very unusual people, tremendous memories in the children, tremendous capability, and this is exactly what they were trying to do. And of course, the hero of the motion picture, of the television series, then was able to simulate almost anything. He was the pretender, and it was really a wonderful story, and everybody thought it was all make-believe because they saw it on television. And yet I've heard this same story from people who've really been through similar things. Oh, they didn't go to an institute, but of course they were subjected to this sort of treatment, and of course this done intentionally and done purposely, because of course they want to control their souls, and then they can utilize these children in future life. Maybe even for a high position. Who knows? Maybe even a high position in government. Pick up the story there, Jeff.
Exactly right, Dr. Stan. That's exactly right. The purpose is to groom, and I know that sounds horrifying to people, that they would use torture in order as a step in grooming children to lead, to run corporations, to be in positions of high authority. Because, you see, by the time these children... Well, first of all, one other thing. when the children are conformed that way, when they receive the demonic indwelling, they receive powers. They have talents, suddenly. They have what I call a sheen on them. It's not like the kind of glow you have when you have the Holy Spirit, you know, when you become a believer and a follower dedicated to Jesus Christ. People say, well, there's a glow. That's the Holy Spirit. They have a counterfeit shine, and I call it a sheen. It's almost like an oil slick. But it's something. It is something tangible that you can see. And a lot of these people do go on and are quite successful in society, and they do scoff and laugh and look down upon people that are on our side. They do tend to cultivate their society, their Satanism, and they want to get more power. So they want to do more for Satan if it will get them more power. And they know there's no getting out of it, because it's like the mafia. Once you're in, how are you going to get out? I only know one way out, and that's one way out is the cross, where Jesus paid the price for our sins. But that involves a free will choice. You might have to give up your life too, if you're one of them who's gone down that road, who's taken their money, who's taken their position, then you want to get out. If there may be a price to pay, but what price is your soul worth, right?
Well, anyway, of course, how old were you when you finally were able to break loose from this?
Well, I'd been afflicted by it all my life till a few years ago. You know, till, say, around the year 2000. And when I say that, I mean that they had done programming on me for me to forget that I ever saw what I saw. This was in the Midwest. I won't name names here. But they programmed me to... They brainwashed me, basically, to have forgotten what I had seen, and I guess otherwise I would have been killed, so like almost everyone else was killed.
In other words, basically what you had was a dissociative personality.
Yes, and had been labeled crazy, marginalized, and pretty much put out to pasture. But then I had to return to Los Angeles to find out what in the world happened to me. What did they do? Something was haunting me, and even... You know, it's even more strange when you add to it the fact that I had been writing stories about what had happened to me, about what I had seen, not realizing that those stories were actually true until later when my personality integrated, all the fragments and everything had to coalesce back together, which happened after I accepted the Lord. I went through a healing process, and my eyes were open, and I couldn't believe it. And then I got confirmation. I confronted people. They said, yes, it's true. More than a few. All the people I was around, I said, well, what do you... You've all been lying to me, you know, and I've been living in an artificial environment. In other words, even jobs that I had, Dr. Stan, were fabricated, you know, like a job to work on a certain story, let's say, and being paid for it and all that. It was fabricated. They wanted something out of me. They used me for certain things, even certain spiritual things. I can't go into that now. That's a whole 3-4 hour topic. But,
yeah, but you do have a website, don't you, up there, where people can actually go to your website, yeah, and get more information?
It's called zephnet.com, and there's information there with me. I've also done my own interviews on Channel Z. It's my own little radio outlet, Channel Z, where I've interviewed Jane Whiting, whom your listeners have heard, and others on this subject.
And, of course, we have a 4-tape set with Jane Whiting, who had a very, very similar experience, except they started with her when she was 3. And, of course, she is. We have a called Satanism and Deliverance. It's a most amazing story. I know Jane personally. She goes to our church. But, of course, she been psychiatrist after psychiatrist after psychiatrist. And she was taking $3,000 worth of medicine a month. This, her husband, fortunately, was able to finance the amazing amounts of medicine. And probably one pill was working against another till she finally went to a Christian psychologist who said, there's nothing medicine has for you, but I know a man who could help you. And he was sent to a, she was sent to a fellow up in Oregon, and this is his ministry, is dealing with people who are victims of satanic ritual abuse. And, of course, within a relatively few months, Jane was back to normal. And, of course, she's been able to help Zeff, and who is our guest tonight, and literally hundreds of people across America with similar problems. And, of course, you'd be amazed at how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people there are probably out there who are victims of this, and certainly thousands have been helped.
I thought that, you know, the whole world was like this, and I've talked to Jane about it. You know, we speculated, well, what do you think the numbers are? Because it's really not just something exotic to do with the CIA, or, you know, that's at a certain high level where they're programming slaves to do different, you know, tasks. We're talking about the ubiquity, the ubiquitousness of Satanism itself, because everyone that is involved in Satanism runs smack dab into this reality. Jane and I once speculated, it seems like it's the whole world.
No, it's not the whole world. It's just but of course they have their people in positions of great power. And there's a fascinating book we have for our skeptic out there. It's written, it's called Operation Bluebird. It's written by a psychiatrist who's treated literally hundreds of the people of victims of CIA mind control or a satanic mind control ritual abuse. And, of course, she's gone through 18,000 pages of government records on this. Fascinating book. Going into the background, of course, it all gets back into the Nazi scientists, many of whom, with the help of the CIA and the OSS, were, of course, allowed to go to South America to continue doing their dastardly deeds. We even have, and I don't know whether we're going to be able to make this available for you, but a video of Sam Donaldson, who was on one of the network programs, 30-minute program, of actually how he tracked these men down in South America. 10,000 of the most vicious of the Nazi scientists we allowed to escape. And continue, of course, their program, Martin Bormann, Adolf Eichmann, Dr. Mengele, certainly Klaus Barbie, and 10,000 or more of the Nazis were allowed to escape. But, of course, the American people have never been told this, which covered, at least touched on, in the book that we carry called The Medusa File. There's another wonderful book, it's out of print, called The Secret Agenda by Linda Hutt, but you can get the Medusa File that at least touches on this and gives you the reference to the books that have been written on it, books that you're not probably going to find at your local library, because this is not information you have to know. So then getting back, of course, to Zeff's story, as incredible as it seems, there's a great deal of scientific evidence that CIA has been creating mental disease in people intentionally and purposely with your tax money.
It's
so
true.
Pick up the story from there, Zeff.
Well, all the so-called psychiatrists I had, they all happened to have ties to the military intel and CIA and all that.
Because they actually hired thousands, hundreds, probably several thousand of psychiatrists, and they were all on the government payroll as part of these macabre experiments.
And they were mainly focusing on children and... you know, there were a lot of people that had self-destruct programming that they would, there was nothing wrong with them really in the beginning, and then the more they went to their psychiatrist, eventually they were put in the hospital, eventually they jump off the building.
Sure, there's a wonderful book called Journey into Madness, the story of Dr. Cameron. He was the head of the American Psychiatric Association, who carried on these experiments in Canada. The book, Journey into Madness, about creating mental disease in people. Intentionally and purposely, and a lot of this is covered in the report that we have called the MK Ultra Report. It's the Church Committee hearings back in the 77, where they were trying to bring out this, and of course it was all brought out there, but the American people never heard about it, or if they did, they forgot about it. Now they actually killed people. Everything to keep silent, because we couldn't let the American people know the truth, could we?
No, that goes under national security. You know, the peace, safety, well-being of the American people. If they knew something like this, they might be outraged. Well, they've known. A lot of this has been published, and they're not really outraged. A lot of them actually don't believe most of what I'm saying. So,
well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Zeff Daniels, and we'll get him to tell his amazing story. Then, of course, eventually finding what this was all about, and, of course, it, talking with Jane. And Jane has really helped so many people because she could equate with what happened to him. And she works very closely with this gentleman up in Oregon. We've interviewed him on our four-tape set, Satanism and Deliverance. No, it's not something for Halloween. It's something very real that affects and involves every one of us today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Zeph Daniels. Pick up the story from there, Zeph.
Well, you mentioned Jane Whiting. I'll just say this again. She was very key in my going through deliverance and further deliverance and further deliverance to get at the root of the not only the abuse but of demonic programming. You know, we get into the spiritual battle. A lot of this is demonic programming. It's coming from the demonic realm, perhaps sometimes through people, but also you could have lodged some sort of legal right for the demonic hierarchy, and there is a demonic hierarchy out there, to have control of your soul, of your person. And the idea is that you'll never get free, you'll never get away, you'll never be autonomous. And as you start walking with the Lord, what happens is the Lord is a healer, and you will go through healing, and part of that healing is he'll bring you someone, as Jane was brought to me, who will help to rid you of that demonic stronghold, which I think Marion Knox, who did deliverance with Jane and helped Jane, he called it the strongman program that is in most people that have this. In other words, what they're doing is not just mind control. They're doing spiritual control through the mind, through consent, through generational ritual abuse, and through these Nazi doctors. But it goes way back. It goes back thousands of years, actually. These techniques have been perfected. But really, what are the Nazi doctors involved with? They're involved with the occult.
And, Kristen, I think what people have to understand is that the whole Nazi movement was founded in the occult. And, of course, this went back to the Thule Society, probably closely related to Skull and Bones. But the Nazi movement was founded in the occult, and this is why they even, of course, you've seen the wonderful movie of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and why, of course, it was most people think that it was all make-believe, that, of course, this story of how the Nazis were trying to get the Ark of the Covenant. Why? Because there was special spiritual power there. And, of course, they also wanted to get the chalice, the chalice that supposedly Jesus had drunk from. This was, of course, I think that was the last in the series, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But the trouble is, there was truth in this. The Nazis, this whole thing was involved in the occult. They even sent expeditions off to Tibet to try to get the masters to come, because that was where the power was from. And they were going to use that power to create the new world order. And, of course, that's what it was all about. So, until people understand this is not imaginary, the Nazi doctors, psychiatrists were working on that. Many of them were brought to this country. Many of them were allowed to go to South America. I've talked to about five or six people who claimed that at one time or another they'd seen Dr. Mengele, the angel of death, here or in Canada. Would we allow that sort of thing? Well, I would ask you, why wouldn't we allow that? There are dark and sinister spirits and forces working at the highest echelons of our society today. Most people have no idea they even exist, and when you try to tell them, they look at you as if you're just totally out of this. But we have a lot of the documentation on that. We have a wonderful video called Deceived. It's a fictional story of the efforts of our military to tap into the supernatural, and believe me, they are tapping into the supernatural, and of course this is where they're gaining a certain amount of the information, the power that is being used to control people and control their minds, indeed to control their souls. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Zeph Daniels. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, if you're out there across America, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I certainly don't want to appear to be like Art Bell, talking about these things, but these are real things. Of course, I don't think I understand the true spiritual battle, but weren't you on, actually, with the Art Bell show recently?
I was just on Art Bell, and I have to say that at first he kind of grilled me to the extent of calling me crazy and wanting to verify whether I was sane or not, and then eventually we spoke for 3 hours, and eventually we started talking about the soul, the spiritual battle, and things like that, and I was surprised at how much he knew about it, how much he knew about Satanism, how much he knew actual Satanists who are very wealthy and well-to-do in our society, and how much they like being Satanists, and he divulged all that. It was an amazing show. This was on a couple of, well, I guess it was last week.
And so he knows a lot of Satanists, and of course, the trouble is a lot of these Satanists are fabulously wealthy. In fact, Aleister Crowley had a home on Loch Ness, sure. And that's why they called him the other Loch Ness Monster.
He said that they were happy, and then, of course, they scoffed and laughed at people like me, who and I said, well, Art, I really had no choice. You know, my mission in life, why I was born, was to expose this, was to walk my walk, and really, in a sense, all I wanted was to just be a free person and sort of have an even playing field, if you will. I never had that. I never had a childhood. I never really had an adolescence. I never had any life that was normal. It was all controlled. Because you have to remember, this whole thing, they work in groups, and, you know, they handle you. So someone like me, who was not one of them, either two things could happen. One, they could kill me, which is what they did with most people I know that weren't them. They did not go with their way. They were killed. They become sacrifices. The other thing that happens is if they feel you're useful in some way, even to get power from. For me, they were using me for spiritual reasons because they all knew me from an early age even. They called me the God Mind because and that was like a euphemism to mean that I belonged to God. And they all knew that at an early age, that they couldn't get me. So what they would do is they try to tap into me spiritually by breaking me down and what they thought they were doing was siphoning off spiritual gifts. Now, I don't actually believe that they can usurp God's will, but I think they believe they could do it. I think that's one of the reasons I survived, and perhaps God gave them strong delusion to keep me around.
Well, I'm glad they did.
Well, I came very close to being killed in 2000. I was surrounded by people who were aiming to kill me. I don't know how I got away from them. I did. My life has been, it was in danger up to that point. I went public in 2002 with my book Lamb, with the website, at that time ZephReport.com, now ZephNet. And since then, I've been left alone. But up to that point, I was harassed. And I mean, followed, tailed, setups all the time, people, so-called friends, people I would meet seemingly at random would be setups. In other words, my life was like the Truman Show. It was completely arranged. And for years and years it was like that. Without me, I knew something was wrong. I was always depressed, going to doctors, feeling suicidal, feeling like self-destructing. All those kind of things were part of the programming. But for some reason, I was able to hold on. And then I heard Jane on your show and her testimony, and the next thing you know, I found someone who could verify everything that I had kept bottled in. She verified it was all true, and others did, of course, and then I've also confronted perpetrators and gotten their confessions directly to me. So I have all the evidence, all the proof, everything. It's all real. There are even more bizarre aspects which I'm not going to go into now, which really do sound like they belong on Art Bell, that involve dealing with, let's just call it the UFO reality or unreality.
Well, of course, I never forget, I was on a nationwide program was really listened to by an awful lot of strange people. This was, of course, a nationwide television program. I was there for 5 or 6 minutes. I think the title was the Unscrewed, if you can imagine how I ever got onto this. I talked a little bit about witchcraft. I had this witch write to me and email me, actually, and she said, you know, witches are nice people. I'm a white witch, and the only reason we conjure up our spells is because we want to contact beings from another dimension. And that's, of course, that's really what they're doing. They're contacting beings from another dimension. Who are these beings? They're demonic spirits. And I went back to her and I said, you may think that these are good beings. You may think you'll get power from them, and I'm sure you do. But, of course, at the risk of your eternal soul.
Yeah, witches want to be possessed.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Zeph Daniels. His book is titled Lamb, and we carry the book because we think it's an important book. And of course, we have the 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance and Aleister Crowley and the wonderful videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And you'll hear Marilyn Manson and Ozzy Osbourne and all these other wonderful people singing about, of course, Marilyn, singing about Aleister Crowley. Who was Aleister Crowley? He was a Satanist. He was led the Satanist movement here in our country for many years until he died. I guess, what, about the mid-1950s, was that it? And we carry another book. It's called Stairway to Heaven. It's the story of the group, the Led Zeppelins. And, of course, they were a satanic group, as were the Beatles, as were... but, of course, you're not going to believe that until maybe you see the pictures of Aleister Crowley on the cover of the albums of the Beatles albums. Anyway, Nathan, how are you doing there?
Hi. Listen, the information on this program tonight is absolutely devastating. It's just completely unhinging. My question for the gentleman is, I may have missed the first hour, but...
we've only been on for half an hour.
Oh, okay. Well... deserves a good 2 hours, believe me. But to what extent were you connected with those really high up in government, i.e. the families that control this country and the world, and to what extent can you answer this question, namely, why is it that they seem, the powers behind the scenes, seem to want to meddle in certain key nations? They seem to focus on certain key nations, Haiti among them, but probably also Panama. And why is it that they seem to identify, do they consider these places power spots or sort of a cult, dominions?
Let's answer the first question.
I can't help you with that question about Haiti. First of all, that's the home of voodoo. And a lot of the leaders of the world go there to get more power. And what they do is they go to see these mambos or high priestesses. In Satanism, it's really kind of, I would call it like a hidden matriarchy. And a lot of the people that have power are not the people that you see in the public eye, but the people that have the power are, in many cases, like Mambo priestesses in the third world. Sometimes they'll be just, look like lowly maids. These people seek that power in those people and even enslave themselves. I know this is going to sound a little bit bizarre, but this is true. They will even enslave themselves to ones that have more power. Oftentimes, these are not the bloodline elites that you hear about, but people, say, in Haiti and other places, poor people.
Hold that thought, Zeph, for a second. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, we had Nathan calling in, and he asked two questions. First of all, what is the relationship to these leading satanic families? Do you know any of these? And then, of course, why is it that these people seem to be so interested in countries like, he said, Panama and Haiti? Why would they seem to have such an interest in Haiti? I mean, certainly there's terrible things going on all over Africa. In the Congo, they've killed within the last couple of years 3 million people. Have you heard about that? No. Yes, so they're talking about the genocide in Darfur there in western Sudan, about 50,000 people. Our good friend, certainly, Peter Hammond says the figure is probably closer to 5,000 rather than 50,000, but they, of course, exaggerate one, and they play genocide. They play down another genocide, like the one in the Congo. But why is Haiti important? And Zeph's point, and I've never even thought of that, Haiti is the home of voodoo. So pick up the story there, Zeph.
Okay, the other question is, have I known the elite? Yes, I've known them intimately well. I'm not going to go into naming names or go into any of that. I'll just say this, that I was brought up in that kind of environment. World leaders were around. And, yeah, I did get to see it from that perspective. I am aware that when people oppose the world system, they're eliminated. Did see a lot of people disappear. Did see a lot of pomp and circumstance and all that. And, look, most of the people that were involved in the elite part of the society that I saw were all part of this ugly fraternity. It was just the way things were. It's very much like the mafia. These people have businesses. They want to protect those businesses. And when other forces come against their business, how do you neutralize competition? How do you neutralize, you know, if you have a satanic network, you can neutralize competition. Say you have a witness coming against your company. They call a grand jury investigation, say, for an insurance company. Well, what if those witnesses just never showed up? What if they had an unfortunate plane crash? Things
it's
like
amazing
that.
How many of the senators who've opposed what goes on in Washington, D.C. have plane crashes or congressmen.
Well, they're all blackmailed. You have to understand, you don't even get to be a congressman these days unless they have a little something on you. That is the money people that would back you. Now, are there clean people? Sure, but by and large, politics is a dirty game. Hollywood movies, that's a dirty game. A lot of the big industries we have in this country, insurance business, things like that, there's you know, shenanigans that go on behind the scenes.
Could I clarify a point that you made earlier? I get off the line.
Okay, go ahead, Nathan.
Now, are you saying that maybe the reason why there may be interventions in certain hot spots is because key members of the bloodline elites themselves are spiritually enslaved to people there in those particular areas who may want them to do their bidding?
They will enslave themselves in order that they would get more power down the road.
From those matriarchs in Santeria or whatnot. So it would seem like it's one way that the matriarchs would be enslaved to them, but it's actually the opposite.
No, it's just the opposite of what you would think. You would never suspect some of the people that have the power, that wield the power because of how lowly they are. You would never suspect that these elites would go to that person
and have to do their bidding and get rid of their enemies.
And actually take orders from them.
Right. So in other words, let's say like Aristide may have been opposed by a powerful voodoo person or something, that's incredible.
We live in an incredible world.
And they're blackmailed, sir, in this way, that if they don't do what the person tells them to do, they might get a curse on their whole family.
Oy.
And when these people throw curses, if you don't have the protection of the Holy Spirit, I mean, most of the people listening on this show, I know, are Christians, praise the Lord, because without that, you really don't have a chance, because you've got to have the power and righteousness of the Holy Spirit in order to stand against this kind of thing.
Amen.
And even then, there's no guarantee you won't be persecuted.
Okay, thanks so much, Nathan. Bye bye. Okay, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'll never forget going to a voodoo shop down on New Orleans, just off of Bourbon Street. In fact, it was on Bourbon Street. And there they had this voodoo a priestess and all the shrunken heads. And, you know, that is really just a totally evil area. Of course, the homosexuals come in and they hold their just grotesque, vulgar dances there, ceremonies on Bourbon Street every year. And this is a center of prostitution, center of all sorts of things. There's sort of an air of excitement about it, but of course it is really a center of evil. And what people don't understand is that this is not imaginary, it is very real. And of course certain of these people, the witch doctors, the voodoo priests and priestesses, do have supernatural power, but there are other people who are in this satanic hierarchy who have this power as well.
It's true. That's what it's all about, power. But a lot of people will go for the money, and they'll hire people to have around that have power, and there'll be an alliance between the power people, those who have cultivated power who usually don't have a lot of money, and then those who have a lot of money in position, but then they want more power, so they form alliances.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, because you were, of course, into music and a music. Weren't you a musician?
Well, I was a musician. But when I was a musician, I actually was, that was a kind of a good pursuit for me, because I was in the Midwest and I toured with various bands and just was a session drummer, really. And that was I didn't see any of that on the road, really. And dealing with those people, and I kind of went from band to band, and I would just help out where I could. That was I had escaped, and here I was playing drums in the middle of nowhere, no one knew me, you know. But when I was in Los Angeles, when I returned after that, that's when I got involved in writing films, and getting involved in the film industry. And the first thing that I had done was a screenplay that became a movie about a family that raised there was a satanic family that raised his child to be sacrificed, and I thought it was fiction. And, you know, imagine this, being on the set of this film, and the joke is that I wrote a story. I'm so mind controlled. I wrote a story that's being filmed, and I don't even know it's real, and yet everyone else knows it's real around me.
So anyway, of course, you've had a number of experiences. You've broken loose. You've tried to expose this entire movement and of course, offer help to other people, because there are other people out there that with these dissociative personalities who do not understand really what's happened in the past. Now, we hear about certain information. For instance, a man named John DeCamp wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, talking about a pedophile ring somewhere in the Middle West, but it had extensions right into Washington, D.C. And anybody who tried to investigate that had, some of them met very strange demises. Do you know anything at all about the story of the Franklin cover-up?
Well, I know I know just from people that have knowledge about that it's true, but I also understand that when you look at pedophilia and the pedophile rings and things like that, just think about it. Most people would not harm children. You know, they have a conscience. Most people are sexually oriented in the world, even if they were, you know, kind of loose. They're not going to go harm children. It doesn't go like that. You don't just get loose sexually and then start harming children. That's a real aberration. But for a Satanist, it's not such a stretch, you see. We have to keep getting back to the fact that the people who will be doing the satanic abuse on these children, and sacrifice and things like that, are Satanists. They actively worship Satan, and that's why they want those children. They want to defile the innocents to get the power.
And, of course, we hear these stories about the pedophilia in the Catholic Church. People don't understand that much of this was tied into Satanism. And, of course, anybody who would like a fictional analysis of this, a wonderful book called Windswept House by Father Malachi Martin, that I have an interview with Father Malachi Martin, where I ask him if this is really true, or at least I asked him off the air, and he said, of course it's true, that wonderful Ivers book that he had. And, of course, Father Malachi Martin was a very, very frequent guest on the Art Bell Show, as you probably know, Zeb. But there was satanic ceremonies within the Vatican Church itself, within the basement, feigned human sacrifices. Of course, they were timed to actually coincide with real human sacrifices. Certainly, Pope Paul VI had commented that the smoke of Satan circulated above the Vatican. And, of course, I'm not just pointing a finger at the Catholic Church. It permeates every aspect of our society. But if you'd like, to get our four-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, he goes into the background of the satanic movement. We know about the pedophilia within the Catholic Church. We don't much like to talk about the satanic element of it. And yet, of course, we carry about a book called Lucifer's Lodge that goes into that. It's written by a Catholic. His name happens to be Kennedy. He's from Boston. I won't say anything more than that. But Lucifer's Lodge, a book we carry, I think is important reading. You need to get it. You need to understand this is not imaginary.
It's amazing. All the resources you have, Dr. Stan. You know, you can back all this up. I think what most people have a problem with is just, it's just almost too hard to to get through your head and say, okay, it almost makes you feel insane to have to consider this.
I know. Well, of course, until you've talked to enough people who've actually been through this and they all tell the same story,
it's all the
really
same.
It doesn't make much sense. And yet, of course, when you recognize there really is evil in the world, why it begins to fit, it come together, and you begin to join the dots and you come up with the truth. Well, we've got Matt calling us from Michigan. Hi, Matt. Did you have a question?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes. In fact, Deb mentioned Art Bell. Well, his colleague, Whitley Strieber, when he had the Dreamland program a few years ago until Art Bell came out of retirement and took it over, had interviewed Cheryl Hersha, who was a CIA sex slave operative until someone rescued her from that. And she stated that here in Michigan, at this Camp Grayling, there's a CIA mind control facility located there. Then there's this, I was wondering if the guest had ever learned of that and whether he had learned, as this FBI retired agent, Ted Gunderson, that the FBI had some dedicated sections to protecting the satanic activities, in fact, at the Bohemian Grove in Northern California.
Well, let's just take one question at a time. First of all, do you know anything about the woman that Matt's talking about?
No, I don't know her, and but I do know that there are facilities here and there, and usually they're movable. In other words, they'll have a facility somewhere, even in an office building, let's say, and then it gets closed down like a boiler room. You know?
No, because we carry a wonderful book by Kathy O'Brien called Transformation of America. That's T-R-A-N-C-E, Formation of America. And she was a CIA sex slave that goes very much along the same line as The Pretender and the story that you're telling, Matt. And then, of course, you asked, were you asking about the Bohemian Grove?
Yeah, I think he asked about Ted Gunderson.
Right.
Had mentioned. Now, Ted Gunderson was in the L.A. office.
He was the LA, he was chief of the L.A. office of the FBI for many years.
Right, and I need to meet up with him at some. In fact, I will. This is being arranged now because I want to go over some things with him, some concrete things about my background, and I want to find out what he knew about people in my. He certainly knew my family. Okay, he certainly knew who they were. He certainly had to look. Even if he was head of the office, he had to be quiet. He had to play the game. He had to go. He couldn't have just started blowing the whistle then, because he would have met with an untimely accident.
And, Matt, there's a wonderful book. It's called Painted Black. I can't give you the author of that, but he was a professor, I think, at the University of Colorado. But he goes into the fact that there was a section in the FBI, the man in the FBI, in charge of Satanism, did everything he could to say it doesn't exist. There are no satanic rituals. There's no. And he would, of course, every time anybody was arrested, he would always be there from the FBI to protect the Satanists.
Furthermore, I understand Ted Gunderson. You probably know who that author is or was.
I'm sure he is. And so we do. I don't know if the book's even in print, but I do have a copy. It's called Painted Black. Anything else, Matt?
Well, I would just thank you for having this gentleman on and encourage you perhaps to even bring Ted Gunderson on or Ted Gunderson and Zeph together for an interview.
We've had Ted on several times, and maybe we'll get him on again. But thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you have a question, we have a few more minutes. Our guest this evening is Zeph Daniels, has an amazing story to tell. And, of course, if you have not yet read his book, Lamb, I think it's well worthwhile reading. It's a fast-moving adventure story. And how much of that is actually true?
Every incident in there, I mean, except for the fact there was an angel in disguise who overcame being crucified and then attacked the rest. There was, you know, God was launching his forces to attack back, which he does. But save for that fictional element and the aspects of various angelic beings versus demonic beings and all that, all the mind control stuff, the pilot flying contraband, the way that they deal with mind control, the doctors involved, the institutions involved, what they do to the children, how they use sex to break them down, how they use drugs, how they use various elements, the satanic sacrifices that go on, the fact that they would kill an entire village of virgin boys and then videotape that and send that into satanic rituals elsewhere, where they would use film and television, closed circuit TV, to beam this stuff around the world. So say there's a sacrifice going on in Haiti, okay, or some Caribbean island somewhere, or even in Africa or whatever. They might film it, and it would be beamed into various places where they're having their rituals. That's true. All of those elements are true, actually. There's nothing in the real meat of the book that is fiction, but it had to be fictionalized because otherwise I don't think it would have made any sense. I had to write it up in that way. Otherwise it would have just been snippets of horror, one after the other. I think it would be too tough to take, frankly.
Well, I think it's a great book. It's fascinating. We've got Mary calling. Hi, Mary. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Mary, where are you calling from?
Covina.
Okay, sure. Well, I know who you are. Go ahead. Did you have a quick question?
I was wondering, would your guest comment about Barbara Hartwell?
Well, I don't know, but I will ask him in just a moment when we get back from the break.
Okay.
You hang on there, Mary.
Thanks.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, do you know anything at all about Barbara Hartwell, or do you want to make any comment at all?
I have just only the brief knowledge. I know that she was yelling at Ted Gunderson, or I don't know, there's some kind of a fight between her and other people, and I just stayed out of it.
All right, and so Mary, I've heard of Barbara Hartwell. I've talked to Barbara. I just don't know, and I certainly don't want to comment either way when I really don't know.
I can't. It's to me, my gut feeling about when I see people fighting and swinging accusations around, I just kind of withdraw. You know, that's not it. That's all I know about her, is that she's written some angry letters that I've seen.
Okay, anything else, Mary?
No, I just wanted to know if she was a phony, if she really is on the right side or not.
Well, I really don't know. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are on the right side, but you don't know. I will tell you, though, there are a lot of people planted in this movement.
Right.
And there is, of course, an organization that was set up by a CIA psychiatrist talking about this idea of hidden memories of childhood abuse and satanic abuse, and actually was set up by the CIA to discredit this idea.
Oh, I remember that.
And, of course, it's really very cleverly done, and you're actually seeing these CIA psychiatrists have been committing these atrocities against children, setting up an organization with branches all across the country saying that these hidden memories of childhood abuse are all fraudulent. Now, occasionally I'm sure that they are. But I think that many of them were absolutely true. And so they had, of course, to confuse the issue. And of course, so you really can't tell what's going on because there's so much conflicting information, and they do that intentionally.
They're
masters of deceit, you might say, Mary.
They have to hide it.
Okay, well, thank you.
God bless you. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, Zeph, we just got about the 40 seconds. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight?
Well, this is obviously a horrifying subject, and I would just encourage everyone to pray about it and be led by the Holy Spirit. Most, if there's any groups out there that deal with this, a lot of times they're infiltrated, so it's a lonely walk, but it's a blessing to be with Christ, and that's the only reason I'm here, to tell you my story, is because of Him. And that says enough right there. Just turn everything to the Lord, and He can heal you of anything that's happened to you. It's not too late.
All right. Well, God bless, and thanks very much for being with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow morning when I'm going to be on your program.
Yes, that'll be great, Dr. Stan. I really look forward to it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Zeph Daniels. His book is Lamb, of which we carry, along with so many other things that will give you an insight into what we're talking about. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening has been Zeph Daniels, and as incredible as this story sounds, why, I believe it's true. I believe that there really are people who are satanically possessed, and of course the one thing they want to do is give you the impression that these people are crazy. I don't think that they are. And when you hear this story over and over again, unrehearsed, of course, it was hearing Zeph and then putting him in touch with Jane. And, of course, they are both now a completely rational instead of the fragmented personalities they were. We carry a number of books. Certainly Zeph's book, Lamb. We carry a book on the Led Zeppelins. It's called Stairway to Heaven. It's actually a takeoff on Stairway to Heaven was the Led Zeppelin's most famous album, the most famous album of all time. And they were Satanists. And as are so many of our rock and roll stars, if you have not yet heard the video, either the 4-hour or the 7-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, you need to get it. You need to get the information. And, of course, you need to get the other information about Hollywood Unmasked or the gods of entertainment, how they're using the entertainment system, of course, to control the minds of our people and turn them to the dark side. We, of course, carry the book, Operation Blue Book, written by a psychiatrist, Colin Ross, who's taken care of many of these people. We have the 1977 Congressional Report on MKUltra, and of course, how they were actually creating diseases in the minds of these people. We have the 4-tape set, Satanism, Deliverance. We have the 4-tape set, The Apostate Church. We have, of course, background story of Kathy O'Brien called Transformation of America, TRANCE, Formation of America. We have a 4-tape set on mind control with interviews with Mark Phillips, who is a professional deprogrammer. We have our 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, where you'll actually hear the interview with Kathy O'Brien, who was sent there as a CIA sex slave. And, of course, amazing. In fact, I'm reading another book that Kathy had written about how she was able to overcome what had been done to her, this systematic abuse. If you ever have a chance to see those videos on The Pretender, if you can ever find it, watch them again and understand they're presenting this on television as make-believe, so you won't believe that there really are people who will use children for this sort of a purpose. So, again, all of these things are available from Radio Liberty. That you need to get the information. That is the book, The Lamb, the book on the Stairway to Heaven, the book of the Transformation of America, Operation Bluebird, and then, of course, the 4-tape set on Satanism and Development, the 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley, the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And so much more information. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our programs. There, of course, you can look at the books and videos we have. If you're going to get one video, get either the 4 or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And you'll hear Ozzy Osbourne and Marilyn Manson singing about Mr. Crowley. You'll hear Timothy Leary. You remember Timothy Leary, who led the drug revolution, talking about how he's carrying out the program of Aleister Crowley. And who was Aleister Crowley? Why, he was the leader of the Satanist movement here in the United States. Not imaginary, ladies and gentlemen, but really very, very real. So this is the reality of what we're up against. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, and most people don't even know the battle is going on. They think it's a political battle. Well, of course, it isn't. If you want the information on Skull and Bones and its occult background, now we've got, of course, the 4-tape set on Skull and Bones, the a book, The Secrets of the Tomb, Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones, America's Secret Establishment, and so much more. We've even gotten the list of all Skull and Bones members from Skull and Bones, the only list you'll ever see like that available. We've got reduplicated their publications, ladies and gentlemen. Well, pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, pray for our provision and protection.